for some time, and it's going to be an exciting week. I really am looking forward to the efforts that we can put forth and in studying together from God's Word, and I'm really looking forward to the week. We had a wonderful time here a couple of years ago when we had the chance to be with y'all, and Tammy and I have been looking forward to the return trip. I still continue to have an affliction that I have had for many years, and that's a hard difficulty in remembering names. Your faces, oh yeah, they belong here and here and here. I can nail the people from London whenever I'm in different places, but don't ask me to recite your names. That's just one of those things that has always been, and it's a real bane for a preacher, you know, but nonetheless, if I have to say, hey, you, and smile politely, please bear with me. No disrespect, it's just that my brain's kind of minuscule, and there's some things that just don't stick real well, but we will work very hard to master that craft as we go on through the course of the week. I want to begin our series on a discussion of saving our children and our grandchildren to kind of set the table a little bit for what we're going to be talking about in our morning class throughout the week. And I certainly hope that you will try to make arrangements, if at all possible, to come and to be with us in our morning studies. It's a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. I have been blessed to be able to work with large numbers of children in the church down through the years. One of the, I guess, specialties, you might call it, is working in vacation Bible school programs. And I probably have been privileged to have a hand in close to 200 of them down through the years. There have been some summers when I've done 6 and 8 in one summer. And so I have had the privilege to work with a lot of young people in a lot of places. In addition to preaching for the Eubank congregation, I also teach at Northern Middle School over in Somerset. So I'm kind of right in the thick of it. Being able to see a lot of things that are happening with our young people today, and hopefully there are some things that we need to talk about as the way in which the church maybe, and as parents, we can better respond to the needs that our children are facing. Because times have changed. I can remember as a child growing up on the farm in Ohio that once we got off the school bus back at the house, we were pretty much there for the rest of the evening. We were going to have chores to do on the farm, and since we were so far out, it wasn't going to be one of those cases that we walked in the door, put down our stuff, picked up the car keys, and headed off to town. It didn't work that way. And neither in my generation did you get to go in and pick up the console to a video game and sit there for the rest of the evening absorbed in what was going on the screen in front of you. We actually used some imagination. We actually did some things. We went outside to play. And there were many things that we did that honestly is just not very common in our culture today. Because of the way in which we have been made aware of childhood predators and other kinds of fears, oftentimes parents are even leery of letting their kids go out in the yard unless they can take a chair outside and sit there and visually watch them the entire time they're outside. My mom would have gone crazy because my mom had work to do. And so she was busy with her chores in the house. And if we got loud and rowdy, there were 3 boys in my family, if we got loud and rowdy, the first thing she said was, there's the door, find it. And we weren't back in for a while. And we all survived. We all grew up relatively well adjusted. And we were able to manage some things. But our times and our culture has changed a lot. And then we have had a lot of other voices that we've had to listen to from the experts who have tried to tell us how to do improved techniques in child rearing. And as a result of that, we have a lot of, especially young parents, who do not have a clue as to what is involved in bringing up children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I don't say that to be mean. It's just that there's been so much confusion. There's been so many voices as to how it's supposed to be done. But in many cases, it's just not getting done. And as a result, we are reaping the whirlwind of that parental indecision. But I'm not going to come in here this morning claiming to be an expert. I've been very blessed. grew up in a family where we attended services from the time I was an infant. My dad was an elder in a church in Columbus, Ohio for well over 30 years. Been blessed that all three of the boys in the family have grown up to be faithful Christians. And in my family, we have three married children, and all of them married Christians and are worshiping faithfully in congregations across the country. We have six grandchildren. My wife can tell you all their birthdays and pedigree. Probably has a whole pocket full of pictures. She's good at that. And so she's got all of those things that go along with being a doting grandmother, and she is excellent at what she does. But in looking with those kids and grandchildren, it is a blessing to know that this morning, all three of our kids and all of our grandkids are going to be in church someplace. And that's not something that a lot of families can say anymore. And so we want to address why that is. And so I'm going to be sharing this morning a blend of personal experience. We're going to be talking about some personal observations, the wisdom of others, and a lot of the biblical principles that God's given us in being able to transmit our faith on to our children. And I hope that you'll enjoy being a party to this study. Primarily, we're going to be focusing our attention on Ephesians chapter 6 and going down to verse 4. And we're going to spend a lot of time this week unpacking this verse. We talk about that term in education a whole lot. And what that means is to take a concept and break it down into smaller applicable parts. How can we take the concept and make it more real and more practical and actually implement the thing? Oftentimes, we read through the Scripture and we find verses like, "Husbands, love your wives." Well, that's real easy to read, but try doing it. You know, there are going to be days when you know what to say and what to do, and things are wonderful and you hit it really well. And there are other times, as husbands, we scratch our heads and say, "What? How did I mess up with that one? How did that come out all wrong?" It's kind of like the story I've used in preaching down through the years about the guy who just didn't see a whole lot of sense in telling his wife that he loved her. I mean, after all, he said that when they got married, and he hadn't been too quick to repeat or to show many signs of affection in the years since. And so he got to feeling guilty about that. And so one day he said, "I'm going to surprise my wife." He went by Kroger and got a clutch of flowers. And he came home and he threw the doors open and said, "Honey, I love you." And he handed those flowers to her. And she crossed her arms and she looked at him and she said, "If that doesn't beat all." Johnny broke his arm. Today the refrigerator broke. And now you've come in drunk. You know, and so, you know, she just couldn't believe that was the way that things could be made to work. And oftentimes what happens is that despite our good intentions, even saying good morning can come out all wrong. Now, whenever my wife wakes up, she is as alert when she opens her eyes as she is going to be the rest of the day. Me, on the other hand, I'm a slow riser. I've told her I'm not accountable for anything I say until after my second cup of coffee. So bear with me. You know, it takes a little while to get the gears rolling, but then I can go all night. But it takes a little while to get the cogs rolling of a morning. We just have a difference in personality. And there are some times when you can say the very right words in the wrong tone of voice with the wrong body language, and it sends an entirely different message. And we've got to learn to be able to focus on that a little bit, both with our spouses and with our children. John Gray, I believe it was, wrote a book, I may be wrong on the author, but he's talking about the love languages, as it's called. And he talks in there about how you really can communicate love to somebody else. And it doesn't work the same with everybody. There's several different avenues that you go down that may actually help somebody else feel loved. One of those methods of showing love that registers really well with some people is that they enjoy getting a gift of some sort. Just a little remembrance of whatever. It may not have been anything major at all, but it just makes their day. Somebody thought of them, and if you know, some little trinket or some gift of some sort is highly treasured and something that really conveys the fact you love me and you appreciate me. To other people, it's more the words of affirmation. I need to be told and encouraged and shown that you really, really do love me, and I appreciate hearing those words. For others of us, it's the idea of it's deeds of support and help. Things that you can do to help ease their burden some way or another. To help show that you care enough to not just dump everything over on them, but rather you are willing to pitch in there and help out and do, and that is so greatly appreciated. And then for some others, it's just, I need you to listen. Don't have to say anything. Just sit there and listen because I need to talk, and it really helps me understand that you love me if you'll just shut up and let me talk, and not try to fix all my problems, but just listen to me. You know, we have these different love languages. Well, it took me a while to learn that. Never will forget first Christmas or so that we were married. I thought I was doing the nicest thing when I bought my wife for Christmas a set of cookware and a vacuum cleaner. She didn't really get thrilled about that. And, of course, I couldn't understand why. I had been thrilled with a new hammer and power saw, but that wasn't exactly the same communication. And by the same token, since I was, my love language tended to be just help me out with deeds and actions, if I felt she was stressed and she was really pushed to the max, well, I'd jump in there. Maybe I'd even venture in and try to load the dishwasher or do some other chores around the house and things to help her out. And I kept getting this, what's wrong? Don't you think I can do it? You know, and I said, this is not communicating well, you know. And so it took me a while to understand that all of this nuance, all of this communication is the stuff that home and family is made out of. Our being able to understand what is the love language of our children, what is it that is really going to help us make a connection, and that it's going to vary from child to child. Now, as we were kids growing up, I was one of those that tended to want to please, and if mom and dad gave me the eye, I just melted. I'm sorry, what do I need to, you know, I was pretty easy to manage. My younger brother, on the other hand, was a bit hard-headed. Mom laughingly said they had to replace the carpet in the church whenever my brother finally reached an age when he could behave himself, because she wore out what we had taking him to the nursery. Oftentimes, multiple times during one service. Took a little while, a little bit longer to kind of get him, you know, adjusted to proper behaviors in some settings. But all of that is just the difference with children. It's not one size fits all. And while we're all in the same household, we soon learn how, as parents, to work with the children and to be able to find what is going to be effective disciplinary techniques, what is going to be appropriate in communicating with them and helping them feel a part of what I call the family team. We're all in this together. We've got things to do. And often problems I have seen develop in families because we became too fragmented. One was going this way. One was going that way. One was going over that way. And mom and dad stayed home. There wasn't a lot of parental support. There wasn't a lot of supervision, and as a result of that, sometimes the other voices that caught the ear of the children were not the best voices for them to be listening to, and we weren't there to watch. That was one thing that my dad shared with me in later years before he passed away, was that if he had it to do over again, he wished that he could have taken more time to be there. I was one of those when I was in school that was in a bazillion different organizations. I won an award as I graduated from high school from the Chamber of Commerce because I was in more extracurricular activities than many other seniors that graduated, and I wasn't into sports. It was just all of the other things that I was involved in. But out of all of those years, all those solos that I sang in chorus, all of those solos that I performed in marching band and concert band, all of those band competitions, all of those football game performances, all of those other plays and other drama productions that I was in, all of those other things, I don't remember Dad being able to come to any of them. And it wasn't because he was mean about it. It was just that he was busy being an elder in the church and working long hours with his job. But he just wasn't there. And Mom was afraid to show up too often for fear that the next thing you know, they'd rope her into being president of the PTA or something. And she wasn't about to go down that road. And so they all took care of us very, very well, kept the home fires burning, and were there to welcome us with open arms as we came home and anxiously find out how everything went. But they were just not able to be there. And that always left a hope. That's why Tammy and I resolved, as our kids grew up, that while it ran us to the point of exhaustion and messed up our schedules going and coming, we were only going to have a window of about 18 years to work in training and working with our kids. And then that window was going to close. And they were going to be young adults and soon off on their own. And so we were going to pack everything into those 18 years that we could pack in. That was one of the things that Mom often said. She says, you know, I get to have you for about 18 years, and then you're going out that door. And I want to do all that I can to teach you to do what's right during the window that I have. I don't know how many times I have dealt with parents and grandparents who have thought about, you know, the time in their lives when they were busy building a career or other kinds of things were involved, and they were not faithful to the Lord. And then they came to a point of realizing, you know what? We need to get serious about going to church and serving the Lord. And so they started coming. But it was too late to be able to influence their kids to do the same thing. And so now they are faithfully worshiping the Lord week after week after week, but their kids and their grandkids are nowhere to be found. So we need to be able to do some thinking about this, and what can we do to address some of these issues. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, he said, "You fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord." Now, what does that mean? How do you do that? Well, we need to find out. The fact of the matter is that in most congregations, we are losing our greatest treasure and resource. And that's our children. Oftentimes, congregations at one point were vibrant, with a whole lot of kids running around, and the future of that church really looked great. You come back 20 years later, and you got the moms and the dads, but the kids are all gone. And there's going to be a natural transition. Some kids are soon going to go off to school, then maybe find a job in another town. Families do not tend to stay as local, maybe, as they did in years past. But nonetheless, there's at least going to be visits home, I would hope. And there would be other ways in which young people can be reached with the truth. But some estimates run as high as 75% of our children that grew up in the church have now fallen away. It is very disturbing to me. I find it over in the Somerset Eubank area a lot. The number of folks that I have bumped into who find out that I preach for the Eubank Church of Christ, "Oh yeah, I used to go there when I was a kid." "Oh really? Where are you now?" And if we just had all of those folks back in the building, we would be packed. We've been blessed and the congregation's grown and we have a full building the way it is. But there's always room for more. And if we were able to reach out and see those folks back where they grew up being, our building would be filled to overflowing and we'd be expanding. So we've got a real issue, and I don't think can just kind of stick our head in the sand and pretend it's not there. Because the stats are there to prove that it is a very, very real issue. And in the world in which we live, it's becoming oftentimes somewhat rare to see a conversion to Christ. And so if we're not baptizing new people, and then we are losing our children, what that means is going to happen in the next 20 or 30 years. I know some buildings now that are closed. I held a meeting 2 weeks ago back down in the area where my mom and dad grew up. And in Stafford, Ohio, there's a little congregation that we used to go to when I was a kid in a small little crossroads community. And it was, the house was usually about half full. And I can still see my dad up there on occasion preaching sermons when we went back home to visit. As we got older, they asked us, boys, to lead singing when we sometimes would visit. One of the hardest buildings to lead singing in I was ever in my life. Because the ceiling went all the way up to the floor underneath the church bell up above. And when you said, hey, from the front, it went, hey, 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 all the way up. And with that kind of echo and resonance, it was really hard to lead singing in there. So I never will forget the Stafford building. It was a bit of a challenge in different ways. Dad was preaching one Sunday, and a cat came in the back door. They had a place open so we could breathe. And the cat was going through Dad's legs the whole time he was up there preaching, and my dad does not like cats. Yeah, I was very proud that he didn't drop kick the thing out the front door. But nonetheless, we had all kinds of memories of things that happened at the Stafford Church. But I went back there whenever I was down on Crum Ridge for a meeting a couple weeks ago. And the roof is caving in, the building is abandoned, and there's no one meeting there at all anymore. So the history's there. The proof is there. And every time we are just one generation away from seeing an empty building. So we've got to focus ourselves on what we're doing and how we can do it much, much better. The fact of the matter is, as Paul teaches us over in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, and going down to verse 6, we'll also be talking about this verse a lot this week. Paul said, I have planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. The fact of the matter is that we've got to do the planting and the watering, but we need to take a little bit more care as to how we're doing it. Some of you may be gardeners. I grew up in a family that had a garden. And in so doing, you don't just go out, throw some seed in the ground, and come back at the end of the summer hoping to raise a bountiful crop. It's going to take some work to be out there chopping down those weeds and hitting it off. That's one of the reasons why Tammy and I have found it difficult to garden down through the years, because my summers are very, very busy with vacation Bible schools and gospel meetings. And so we could, maybe earlier in the spring, while I'm still teaching school, we could get the ground all tilled up, we could get the seed in the ground, but we wouldn't be there to tend it. And we wouldn't get a thing out of that garden. You got to chop out the weeds, and that's easier done when the weeds are small. It's easier done when you can get to it in a timely manner. When you are able to keep the weeds out so that the full blessings of sunlight and moisture can get to the vegetable plants, and then you can rejoice in the harvest. But if you let it get ahead of you, you got your work cut out for you. And the same thing happens in rearing our children. A lot of times we sit back expecting the real focus on spiritual growth to occur when their preteens are becoming teenagers. And oftentimes we have waited too long. Now, I talk about effectiveness. I teach a high school class at UBank. I'm working with many kids that have grown up in the UBank congregation. I know the teachers, many of them are actually school teachers or retired school teachers. They know how to teach. I know the subject material that was used. The various workbooks and other study guides that have been used through the years as those kids were young and growing up in Bible classes. But friends, I'm here to tell you, I can be sitting there looking at these kids who grew up in the church and say, who built the ark? Jonah. What part of the Bible talks about the life of Christ? Genesis. And you get sick to your stomach. It wasn't that that material was not presented. It was not that they were not exposed to it. fact was, it didn't sink in. And we're going to have to look at that and see what is involved in effective teaching. And the key to it comes back to the fact that when you take 168 hours in a week, thereabouts, and on a good week, they're going to be around church people 3 to 4 hours, and they're going to have maybe 2 hours in an age-appropriate Bible class. 2 hours a week. We have at least a 6-hour school day. Now, whenever we begin to see the differential there, we begin to understand if we can't get it done in here. We're not going to be able to nurture children and bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord if the only thing that they get is 2 hours a week at tops sitting in a Bible class here. It's got to sink out and seep out a little bit more to get that concept across. So we're going to have to learn some ways to effectively plant and water so that we can be more involved in seeing the salvation of our children and of our grandchildren. Another theme that we're also going to be exploring this week is the fact that sometimes we wonder, well, why is it the church doesn't grow? The Lord's supposed to give the increase. Yep, He is. But do you put fresh fruit in a rotten barrel? A lot of times, there's some personal cleanup that Christians and congregations have to do to make this a place where our kids want to come. And I'm not talking about fresh paint on the wall. I'm talking about that spiritual maturity and that love and support that make the kids want to be here. When our kids were growing up, our girls were in marching band. And oftentimes we were in competitions all over creation. St. Louis, Atlanta, Cincinnati, wherever. And normally, if you've ever been around those band competitions that are the bigger ones, they don't get around to winding up the competition and doing the awards presentation till sometime between midnight and 1 o'clock in the morning. By the time all the different classes have competed, all the semifinals have taken place, the judges have done their final tallies, and then you have the presentation of the awards. Now, oftentimes with the school band, they made plans to spend that night, Saturday night, in the far-off cities, and then drive home sometime on Sunday so the kids could be ready for school on Monday morning. And to give them credit, oftentimes they would have some kind of religious service for the kids while they were on the road. But our girls were always determined that Mom and Dad need to come to the band competitions. They knew we were going to be there anyway. And as soon as the awards were given, they said, let's get headed home. Because they wanted to be back home at the home congregation for church on Sunday morning. Sometimes that drive was so long and arduous that I wound up packing a suit. I go up into the building and cleaned up a little bit and changed into a suit just before we started the Sunday morning service. That's just how close we cut it, being able to get back. But we were home. And the kids were thrilled to be there. They were happy to circulate through that crowd and to be able to be not only with friends that were their own age, but with the adults that were around them that they knew loved them and cared about them and would be anxious to hear how things went last night at the band competition. Home was where they wanted to be. And we did everything possible to get them there. That's the kind of draw. That's the kind of chemistry. That's the kind of planting and watering that we want to see develop with our young people. And the kind of interest and support that we have to have as parents and grandparents to reach back and say, hey, what's going on in your life? But how's it going? Who won the ball game Friday night? How'd the band competition go? How is school working out? You know, having that interest in them is going to tell the difference. So it is important that we think about what we're doing and why. You know, I've shared some things of a personal nature. I'll be sharing a lot more as we go through the course of this week. Not because it's something to brag about. Some of the stories are great, some of them are sad. But the fact of the matter is, Paul retold the story of his conversion at least three different times in the book of Acts, because there were lessons to be shared in each situation. And so we need to think about and reflect on where we've come from and where we need to go in trying to get people involved in a study of the Word of God, and to fan back into a flame what still may be a flickering ember deep within the heart. You know, one of the encouraging verses to me in dealing with the idea of reaching out to children, and it's one that we can take some consolation in, is dealing with the instruction that Solomon gives us back in the book of Proverbs. Whenever he talks about the work that we do in training up our children, I've heard this verse all of my life in Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Train up a child the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Yeah? And there's a lot in that verse. But notice what happens if you change the inflection just a little bit. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. It may be that we sow seeds, and our children go far afield from where we'd like to see them go in service unto the Lord. And we may be dead and gone. But as they reach the twilight years of their lives, it may be those memories start roaring back of what Mom and Dad wanted us to be. The type of life that Mom and Dad lived. The trail that they blazed in serving the Lord. And I've strayed far away from that. I'm a prodigal son that does not live like I should have. But now I'm getting old, and my days are numbered. And maybe it's time for me to take a second look at some things. And so if we can do the planting and the watering that we need to do, we may not always see the immediate fruit grow from that, but we may be able to plant the seed that will one day bring forth fruit in abundance. Because that's the condition of a heart. And that condition can change over time. From a hardened heart to one that is reachable. And so if we've been able to pray for them, to plant that seed, to nurture them in the right direction, we'll be able to see some great things happen and souls saved. So I'm looking forward to an exciting week. And I hope you'll bear with me as we work our way through this to see some ways that we can work to save our children and our grandchildren. Thank you for your time this morning.